Scott Harreld is known for his interviews.
Boy, you're asking great questions. I think you're in the right career path, my friend. I really do.
Scott Harreld's SOS Radio podcast starts now.
It's been a rough season, and we all just feel like we need a little more hope, right? And it's so easy to forget how fragile our bodies are. We're talking about working past all the challenges that life gives us with Scott Frost on SWS Radio. And back in 2009, Scott was dirt biking around Las Vegas and had an accident that actually paralyzed him from the shoulders down. But he's on the phone. Good morning, Scott.
Hello, Scott. This is going to be challenging. We're both named Scott.
I know. Well, I don't usually refer to myself in the first person, so.
You can call yourself the Scott. Yeah.
Or you just refer to yourself in the third.
Yeah.
So when I was talking to myself, I said.
Scott doesn't want to answer that question.
It's wild because we do this on the radio and then we get to do it on Zoom through video. It's like, I really wish I bought a whole lot of stock in that like 6 months ago.
Yeah, missed it by that much, yeah.
So tell us your story, Scott. You loved riding dirt bikes, and then it became one of the biggest challenges of your life.
It was a beautiful Mother's Day. We had just gotten back from camping at Lake Mead, and my kids were going to go to a movie with their mother, and I was doing what I do a lot. I said, I got to work, and I stayed back, and they went to the movies, and they're like, come on, Dad, and I'm like, nah, I got to work. And I was about 2 hours into working on this proposal, and a buddy of mine calls and he says, hey, you've been bugging me for a couple of years to go for a ride. Let's go for a ride. It's a beautiful day. And I said, nah, well, okay, let me work another 30, 45 minutes and I'll be over. And grabbed my shoes and my riding pants and jumped to my car and got on a bike. And 10 minutes into the ride, we were in this rain retention basin, one of those big concrete, you know, they're the size of football fields here in Vegas out by Madeira Canyon. And we were riding back and forth and going up and down the sides. And I hadn't ridden in a while, so I was getting tired. And I went to park at the top of what I thought was a flat place to park and rode up the top, went to put on my front brake. And I looked down and that what I thought was flat rolled off down the other side and dropped off about 5 feet. I didn't even see it. And it dumped me right onto the front tire of the motorcycle, and my head went over the handlebars, hit the crown of my head, snapped my head back, and took a big blow to the head, but I wasn't knocked out, so I was 100% conscious as I felt myself go completely paralyzed, and all of a sudden, in a blink of an eye, it's hard to breathe, couldn't feel anything from my shoulders down. It's the weirdest sensation, Scott, when you are paralyzed, your brain can't get any feedback from your body. There's no proprioception. So it reverts back to its earliest memory, which is the womb. So when you close your eyes, you feel like your arms are crossed across your chest and your knees are pulled up to your chest and you're floating in warm water. I kid you not.
Wow.
Yeah, really, really strange sensation. Then you'd open your eyes and I was on my stomach with my head to the side with the motorcycle on top. And my buddy comes over and goes, dude, are you okay? You hit your head really hard. Are you all right? I told him, I think I broke my neck. And the whole tone changed from there. And the first miracle that happened was we were able to get a cell signal out in the middle of the desert, which back in 2009, this is before GPS and Google Maps and everything was perfected. And we were able to get a hold of 911. They said, 911, what's your emergency? My friend says, we've got a dirt bike rider with a broken neck. Please send Lifelight. And they said, we can't do that. And then he's like, why? You've got to send Lifelight. They said, we've got to confirm the severity of the injury with a terrestrial-based search and rescue unit. And I'm thinking to myself, one, how are they going to find us? And two, how long is that going to take? I'm starting to do math in my head. You know, with the accident, it must have been a little after 3 o'clock, and now I've been laying here for 10 minutes. We got to hold the 911, and then they're going to send search and rescue. They got to find me, then they triage me, and then they send a helicopter. How long is that going to take? And it started a flurry of activity where we're talking to 911, and then Court's using my phone to try to call his buddy that works for Life Flight. He's getting voicemail on his buddy's phone, and we're trying to guide these people in, and they keep asking us what our address is. You know, it's like right at the rock, left at the sagebrush, you know.
Yeah.
North of this mountain and just southwest of Henderson Airport. You know, there weren't any landmarks. It was really hard. So then there, about 15, 20 minutes later, we hear sirens and they can't get to us. We can hear them circling around us, but they can't get off the surface streets and get onto the dirt where we're at and ride out to us. And we're down if you were looking across the desert, we're down in a ditch. So there's, couldn't see us. So Court jumped up on top of where I'd fallen off, and he spotted a mountain bike rider way off in the distance. And if you can imagine how loud you would yell if you were trying to save somebody's life, and he's screaming, "Hey, help," and screaming, and he gets this guy's attention. And the mountain bike rider comes riding over and says, "Hey, what's up?" And he says, "My buddy's fallen off a motorcycle. He's broken his neck. We're trying to get, if you hear those sirens are for us. If you could ride out there and direct them into us, that would be awesome." He goes, "I'm on it." Rode off. About 5 minutes later, a Henderson police officer came, and I said, "Oh, thank God, I'm saved." And he jumped down in the ditch, and he's touching me on the back, and he's saying, "Hey, buddy, it's going to be okay. Hang in there, hang in there." I said, "Can you, do you have GPS?" And my buddy's like, "Can you talk to 911? And now he has to talk to 911 because they can't talk to fire directly. You know, police can't talk to fire directly. So through 911, he's able to give the search and rescue the coordinates of where we're at. And now we have a landmark, which is his big SUV cruiser. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm running out of air. I'm doing the math in my head again. And I was so angry that I had done this to myself, but now I started to get scared. I'm like, I'm not going to last. I can hardly breathe. He's telling me they still got to find me. They got to triage me. And then they're going to send for the helicopter. Like, how long is that going to take? For the first time, I thought, I'm going to die. And my heart sank. I said, I'm not going to make it. This is where the Scott Frost story ends, in a ditch in Las Vegas. My eyes welled up and I said, I'm not going to see my kids again. I'm not going to work again. And I prayed for the first time, and I said, God, if you're going to take me quick and make it painless. And then I got this idea, and I said, call the kids' mom, try to get a hold of Heather. He uses my phone. He's got 911 on his phone. He calls using my phone and gets a hold of their mom and pulls them into the parking garage. They're all in their car. And I can remember, your dad's had a serious accident, and I hear my kids start screaming, and it just breaks your heart. You hear them crying. I'll never forget that. I said, I love you guys. I love you guys. I love you guys. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I love you. Take care of each other. Take care of your mother. Be good kids. Remember what I taught you. Know that daddy loves you. And my daughter is screaming, Dad, don't go. And my son is screaming. It was just heart-wrenching. But I wanted my kids to know and not wonder what I was thinking as I passed away. I wanted them to know that I was thinking of them. They left the phone on, and the officer said, keep them talking, keep them talking. So they're asking me questions and they're trying to keep me on the phone, and I'm just drifting off. I'm drifting away. You know that feeling on a roller coaster when you're going up for the first time and it's like, choo, 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 choo. Yeah. And somehow you know you're going to be safe on the other side, but you don't know what the ride's going to be like. And that's exactly what I felt like. I know where I'm going, but man, I wonder what this is going to feel like. I wonder what this is going to feel like. My last conscious thought was, I wonder what this is going to feel like. And that's the last thing I remember thinking to myself. And then there was this sensation of arms underneath my legs and arms underneath my shoulders as I was being lifted, like I was being lifted up. And then just then I was jostled awake, and there were helicopter rotors above me. And they were trying to fit all 6'7" of me on a 6'2" spine board inside of a Life Flight helicopter that apparently doesn't fit anyone that's over 5'10". So they're moving oxygen tanks around, and they're pushing and shoving and pushing and shoving and trying to wedge me in this thing. And that's when I woke up and I thought, oh my God, I'm alive. And I was so elated. I had oxygen going, and obviously I was scared. I mean, I was completely paralyzed, but I was so elated because I had for sure I was gone. And it was like, all right, I'm back. And I started thinking, okay, who are people that are paralyzed that have done great things after their injury? Who can I benchmark? Who can I relate to? And obviously you think of Christopher Reeves, you know, the guy that played Superman. And then I remember reading an article here in Las Vegas about the CEO of Ameristar Casinos. His name was Craig Nielsen. And Craig Nielsen was quadded in an automobile accident, and he ran his empire completely from his bed. He had people with design hotels. He took a company public, paralyzed. And I said, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And I said, I'm going to have to find somebody that knows Craig Nielsen, and I'm going to have to learn exactly how he set that up. And we're flying to the hospital. We've got to do all of our triage and everything. And we land, and the first thing I want to know is if I broke my neck. They won't tell me what's going on. And it's the scariest feeling, just not knowing. And now word has traveled. My brother's on his way. My business partner is coming. My parents are flying down. And it becomes this big rush of activity. And I go into surgery. I have my spine fused. And I've spent 9 days in ICU where you lose complete track of time. I had surgery on a Tuesday morning. I woke up what I thought was Wednesday morning, and it was Saturday. And they want to keep you completely still and healing and not panic in that state. But then they said, you've got to go to rehab. And there is no protocol for spine injury other than stabilize the spine and then send someone off to neuro rehab. And that's all the hope you have. There's no treatment. There's no miracle cure. If you're paralyzed from the shoulders down, you're probably going to be paralyzed from the shoulders down for the rest of your life. And we started looking at rehab. There's, you know, Craig Hospital in Colorado, which is the best. And I didn't want to leave my kids and my family and my business here in Las Vegas. So I said, well, where's a place in Las Vegas? We found a place called Desert Canyon Rehab Hospital. We went over there and they do an intake, talking to the charge nurse. Her name's Rhonda, great gal. And I said, so Rhonda, how long have you been doing this? She says, oh, a couple of years. I go, what'd you do before that? She goes, oh, I was in private care for about 10 years. I helped a guy out. And I go, oh, who was that? And she says, Craig Nielsen. So I found the caregiver for the guy that I was thinking of in the helicopter. That was the first God wink that I had, was like, okay, I'm in the right spot. So I said, Rhonda, well, you and I are going to be talking. We're going to be spending some time together. And Rhonda and I are still friends to this day, but she was able to tell me exactly how he did everything. So we got set up with Wi-Fi and fax machine, and we started doing physical rehab, and nothing's moving. I mean, the first thing you have to do is get used to sitting up. Your brain, spinal injury patient, does not do well sitting up because you have an evolutionary response. When you were injured, you know, before we had modern medicine, if you had a head injury or a neck injury, and you tried to sit up, your body would lower your blood pressure and make you nauseated. So you would lay down so it could heal. So every time they try to sit up a spine injury patient, you get nauseated, your blood pressure goes down, and it wants you to pass out. So you lay back down. So they, in order to rehab you, they have to get you to override this parasympathetic nervous response. And this takes forever, and we're not getting anywhere. And all I have to look forward to is them sitting me up, swinging my legs over the bed, me getting nauseated, throwing up. My arms are so heavy, they pull out of their sockets because there's nothing to hold them in. So they have to harness my arms up. And this goes on for about 10 days. And a buddy of mine comes in with the kids' mom. And I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. And I said, Paul, what are you doing here? The last time Paul and I saw each other, Paul and I exchanged expletives over a business deal that had gone wrong, and I swore I never wanted to see him again. So what he was doing in my hospital room was confounding me. And at this point, I was completely helpless. And I looked at him and he goes, Scott, can I pray on you? And I said, pray on me? I'd had people say, can I pray with you? Or do you mind if I pray for you? But he said, can I pray on you? I thought at this point, man, I'll take anything I can get if it means I can start sitting up and things will start moving. And my father was there, and my father's a gruff old army vet. And my son was there, Heather was there. And he starts to pray, and he's going up and down my body with his hands, like he's scanning my body. And he says, Christian, say a prayer for your father. And my son's, you know, 14, and he's like, God, you know, please help you, my dad. And he says, Randy, that's my dad's name, say a prayer for your son. And he goes, Father, everyone's very thrown off by this approach, right? Then he starts to speak in what sounds like a different language. And he's going up and down my body and up and down my body. And this goes on for 15, 20 minutes. We're looking around the room and I'm kind of shrugging. And he looks at me and he goes, Scott, you have to believe. Scott, you have to believe. Now, I was raised in a Midwestern Lutheran household. I've been going to church and singing hymns since I was 2 years old. And this was something I just was not familiar with at all. And I'm like, okay, I got to have faith. I got to have faith. And I close my eyes and I start to breathe. And I'm starting to feel this warmth. And he's going up and down my body. And And now he's starting to almost sweat, and he's talking in this weird language, and people are praying around me. And then he says, "Father, show us an irrefutable sign. Show us an irrefutable sign that you are going to heal your son, Scott. Show us an irrefutable sign." And he presses his hands on my stomach, and my eyes go open, and my chest leans up, and both of my feet raise off the bed about 4 inches and then go back down on the bed. And I didn't lift my legs. I couldn't move a muscle at this point, Scott. And my dad, 24-year Army vet, decorated airborne ranger, stumbled back in amazement. And Paul looked at me and he goes, "Do you believe? Did you see that? Did you see that? Do you believe?" And I said, "I believe." I didn't. I stammered. I didn't know what to say. I'm like, yeah. And I was left there. And I looked at my dad and I'm like, "Did you see that?" And he goes, "Yeah, I saw that." He goes, "I wanted to say hallelujah." And I said, "That would have been a good time." And my dad's very conservative. Like I said, if you knew my dad, one, for him to witness it, and two, for him to acknowledge it, and three, for him to say, "I wanted to say hallelujah." Those were all things that he would not normally have done. The next day, the therapist comes in and, they wrap my shoulders up and they swing my legs around. And the longest I've been able to go, Scott, was like 20, 30, 45 seconds before I started to get nauseated and they had to lay me back down.
Yeah.
They swing me around and we had this playlist. And I think the first song on the playlist was Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen. And I used the songs kind of one to distract me and two to kind of time me. Like I could, okay, if I can make it through the first chorus, then I know I've been up for 45 seconds. Yeah, that kind of thing. I kind of knew how long. And so Bruce is singing away. And at the normal spot where I would start to pass out, we zoomed right through it. And then pretty soon we got through the end of the song. And then it started the second song. The rehab nurse is looking at me and she's like, "This isn't possible. Like, this is not possible." And the guy behind me, Scott Ryan, the other nurse, who normally has to hold me up, otherwise I would fall over. He normally has to hold me up. He's holding me up. And I said, "Scott, let go." He says, "You'll tip over, Scott. I'm not going to let go." I go, "Let go. I can feel my stomach muscle." And he lets go. And I stand up. And it's 3 minutes have gone by, 4 minutes have gone by, 5 minutes have gone by. And Deborah Howell, my PT nurse, looks at me and says, "This is a miracle, what you're doing right now." And from then on, things started to move. And 6 weeks later, I was standing in what they call a platform walker. And we started working on moving my legs. I could take like a 4-inch step with my right leg and couldn't get my left leg to work. And another couple of weeks went by and I was walking down the hall. Not easily, but I started taking steps down the hall and 12 feet became 15 feet, became 25 feet. And one day I blurted out this audacious goal that, "Hey, I'm going to walk into the grand opening of our new restaurant unassisted by any mechanical devices." And that became my battle cry. We were working on what would become our first restaurant, Hussong's Cantina at Mandalay Bay. We had started negotiating the lease before I had my accident. And so we continued to negotiate the lease, raise the money, and design the restaurant while I was in the hospital. We opened the doors on January 21st, 2010. And I got up holding my girlfriend's hand and did what we did, what we call a handheld assist, and walked about 18 feet to the corner of the bar and ordered the first margarita in front of 200 cheering people. And that was just the glory to all of the healing and grace that God had given me. And it was just such an amazing journey. All these miracles that happened along the way, I mean, I cannot tell you, there were a number of miracles that just happened along the way, all along the way, that were steering me towards something better and something greater. And it was a huge reset in my life. So I'm sitting here, 2020, in the middle of COVID. We've just shut down every business that I've worked over the last 10 years with my team to build, and all the while rehabbing my physical body and trying to maintain what I've gained. And I'm scared. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know if our businesses will survive. And I'm sitting here staring in the middle of the night and I'm finding myself praying just like I was back in rehab and saying, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm strong enough to get through this. I don't know what to do. And then the answer hit me again. It's like, Scott, you got to go out there and share your story. You got to go out there and talk. Because I've been through this before. A seemingly insurmountable object has been placed in my path, and we got over it. And now another seemingly insurmountable object has been put in front of us, and all of us are out there feeling it. We're all feeling angst, that exhaustion, that, you know, can I get to the summit of this mountain? And if I get to the summit of this mountain, are there going to be other mountain ranges? You know, we don't know. We don't know. And I remember sitting in the hospital in the early days before Paul had visited me, and it was pitch black. And my girlfriend was sleeping next to me in a cot. And it was so scary. Your body clock's all thrown off, and I'm just sitting there alone and with your thoughts. And you think of all the what ifs. You know, I'm not going to be able to work. I'm not going to be able to support myself. What if I end up in a skilled nursing home? You know, all of these horrible thoughts. And then out of nowhere, a voice came and said, all you wanted to do your life was dance, when all I've wanted you to do was sing. You can no longer dance, but you can sing.
We're talking to Scott Frost today at SWS Radio, and back in 2009, he had a dirt bike accident where he broke his neck. And through that season, Scott, you were in the hospital. I mean, like 81 days. You started a business while you were in the hospital and going through rehab. And a little earlier, Scott, you were talking about how you were in a space where you were angry with yourself. Scott, what have you learned about the best ways to deal with anger that you have for yourself?
That's a great question, Scott, because so many people have regret. And regret is one of the most powerful emotions. Regret over relationships, regret over lost jobs, regret over whatever bad decision you may have made. And it is so easy to hold on to regret because it's funny. It becomes comfortable. You learn to use that regret almost as an excuse. Well, I can't do that because of this. I can't do that because I feel this way. And I gave myself one day to have a pity party when I was in the hospital. And it was hard. For the first time, you know what set it off? For the first time, I realized I wasn't going to drive again.
Yeah.
My daughter, who was 16, was learning to drive when I had my accident. And my buddy and her were going to do a driving lesson in my car. And I thought, oh, I'm never going to drive that car again. And then that just started this whole cascade of all these things I wasn't going to do again. It made me so sad and so angry. And I was just like, what have I done to myself? What have I done? And they came in to do rehab, and I'm normally a happy, cheerful guy. I had my playlist going. They put on the playlist. I said, no, I don't want to. And they're like, what's wrong? I said, I just need a day. And my girlfriend shut the blinds, and I cried. I sobbed. And I mourned my physical body. I was never going to have the same body again. And I played that decision to go riding over my head. I played riding up that hill over and over in my head. What if I just would have break, you know, just a little sooner? What if I would have stopped? And I kicked myself. And then I looked and I said, okay, this is enough. There's too much to do. You can move on. But the big thing is, let it go. You can give it to God. And that sounds so cliche, but people have to realize that these cliches are there for a reason. Try it. You have to give it to God. Just take this from me. I don't want it anymore. How many times have you talked about your yoke? Give me your yoke. It is light. And it was kind of like you're going through the motions. When you grow up in a church and it's kind of a, you know, a very traditional church, you know, you go to catechism and then you get confirmed and then you have youth group and you're kind of indoctrinated at an early age. So you don't have a perspective, an adult perspective to apply these great lessons to. Because you haven't had regret at 9 years old, right? You haven't had heartbreak at 14, or maybe you did, I don't know. But you don't have these life lessons when you're growing up in a church. So when they confront you as adults, you still have this perspective, but then you say, wait a minute. He said, your yoke is light, right? He said, burden me. I can carry you. The whole footsteps poster, which is a great poster, right? It was the time when you saw one set of footprints that I carried you. Climb on his back because you have to have that faith and let it go.
Control is kind of an illusion, isn't it? You know, we think we have control in this world, but when you really think about how much you can control versus how much you can surrender, you see a completely different dichotomy. And we're talking with author and restaurant entrepreneur Scott Frost today at SWS Radio. You know, years ago, you had a dirt bike accident. You were in the hospital for 81 days. You launched a business through that season. But as you were lying in that hospital bed, you raised money to open your first restaurant. Since then, you've opened restaurants in Arizona and New York. And as we know, through this whole pandemic that we've been walking through, it's wreaked havoc on the restaurant industry and so many others. But Scott, how have you navigated the faith aspect of something you've worked so hard to accomplish, being hit so hard by something that's just completely out of your control?
There's two lessons that I took from the many lessons of spending 81 days in the hospital. And the first one is, if you don't command it, you don't control it. And what do you actually command? In your life, what does God command and what do you actually command? So there's two things that you command that no matter what, every morning when you wake up, you have 100% control over these two things, your effort and your attitude. Nobody sits there when you wake up and says, today you're going to have a very poor attitude and you're going to put forth a marginal effort. You make the decision to have a poor attitude. You make the decision to have a marginal effort. That's 100% on you. That's not on God. God does not control that. You control your effort and your attitude. Yeah. So every day I wake up and I say, okay, what's my effort? What's my attitude? How am I feeling? And if I'm not feeling it, that's when you can pray and you can say, God, give me a better attitude. Make me feel better. Give me something to look forward to today. Help me put somebody in my path that I can help. Something to give me a better attitude. And Father, give me the strength to have that effort that I need to get through the day. I mean, every day for me, when I wake up, I have spasms that are strong enough to dislocate joints. And then I have what they call neuropathy, which is from a spinal cord injury. It's a burning sensation of your skin that's trying to regenerate nerves. And every morning, that's what I wake up to, is spasms and burning. And then my routine starts getting, you know, helped to the bath and, you know, getting bathed and then getting dressed and getting up in the chair. And I'm in a power wheelchair that gets me around. And my day starts. And every day, that's the first thing I have to do, is deal with that pain and that discomfort. And then along with everything else that comes with running a business. So that was the first lesson, effort and attitude. And then the second lesson was, people tend to reflect on something that bad that has happened in their lives that is bad. When they look back on whatever that's happened, they go, why did this happen to me? Why did this happen to me? And they take on this victim mentality. And I learned a very quick trick by changing one little preposition in there. And you ask yourself, why did this happen for me? And you realize that there is a lesson in every adversity. And trust me, in adversity is a lesson that if you have faith and you have effort and you have attitude and you get through that adversity, you look back on the lessons you've learned and you've wondered what your life would be like had you not learned those lessons, had you not been faced with that adversity, and you become thankful. So I can tell you, Scott, and I can tell your audience out there that's wondering, you know, how are we going to get through this? How am I going to find another job? How am I going to feed my family? How am I going to be a good father? How am I going to be a good mother? I don't have the answers. My kids are driving me crazy. I understand that level of helplessness. I get it. But you have to trust that there are lessons. What are the lessons in this adversity? What is God trying to teach us right now? Because if I got on that motorcycle today and you said, okay, Scott, I'm going to put you on this motorcycle. You're going to have this accident. And here's everything you're going to learn over the next 10 years. And here's all the wonderful people you're going to meet. And here's all the wonderful things you're going to do. Do you still want to get on that motorcycle? Versus if you don't get on that motorcycle, you don't have that accident, I don't know where you're going to end up 10 years from now. Having what I have now and the life that I've had, I'd get back on that motorcycle.
We're talking to Scott Frost today at SWS Radio. He leads Titan Hospitality Group. They run Husong's Cantina and Slice of Vegas Pizza Kitchen, some other restaurants around the country. Scott actually wrote a book called Living on a Chair, Lessons of Love and Faith After Breaking My Neck. Thanks for sharing your story and being so vulnerable with us, Scott.
My pleasure, Scott. I love your program, and God bless all your listeners and everybody. Keep your chin up. We're going to get through this together one way or the other, but first and foremost, be nice. Be nice. Everyone just be nice. We're all in the same storm. We might be in different ships, but we're all in the same storm.
Thanks for downloading the SOS Radio podcast.
Tell a friend and connect.
SOSradio.net.